Blog Talk Radio.
Ready for another episode of the NFL Free-for-All Show. Let's get this show started. I'm your host, Brian Hughes. Alongside me is my co-host, Mr. Norm Arendez. We also have Mr. TP Timeless in the building. Norm, I'm going to start with you. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good, my friend. One day removed from the Chiefs, showing the league not to panic. They will still deliver. Happy Kansas City fan right here.
Absolutely. And Mr. TP Timeless, how you feeling this evening?
I done took off my blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped inside the kitchen. Timeless is alive.
Absolutely. Boys, well, here's what I kinda had prepped for this show. Like, I think everybody's gonna want to talk about the games that played and preview the games that are coming up. I think the preview thing is kind of Ty's Sunday morning thing. But I do want to get into some of the storylines. We're five games into the season. We're basically a third of the way done with the season. And I wanted to talk about some of the storylines that are developing. I wanted to talk about a couple of the things that have gone on, both good and bad. And then I also wanted to bring up some of the coaching moves that were made and how the teams have performed since. So without any further ado, let's bring up topic number one. This is something that that our good friend and chef here in the building, Sirius, has posted numerous times on social media, and that was Ryan Fitzpatrick. The Dolphins are now 3-3, boys, and they're right in the thick of the chase. They're only one game back from the Buffalo Bills. The Dolphins actually pulled Ryan Tannehill to bring in Tua Tagovailoa. And so my question to you guys is, everybody has pretty much said, hey, listen, by midseason, Tua is going to be the starting quarterback. But my question to you guys is, where the organization is at currently with the fact that they are in a playoff hunt, and the reality is that Ryan Fitzpatrick has been playing phenomenally this year other than one game. I'll start with you first, Norm. Number one, do you play Tua Tagovailoa this year? Are you still building for the future? Do we have to see what we have in this kid before a guy like Trevor Lawrence comes out or some of these other kids come out? Or do you continue to ride the hot hand with Fitzmagic and really push for the playoffs?
I was really surprised by that article that came out about 2 hours ago. I was really surprised by it. I didn't think Ryan Fitzpatrick did anything to get relieved of his job. And again, I'm never really big on rookie quarterbacks. You got to do some amazing stuff in the first 2-3 years before I get on your wagon. So I don't think it's the smartest move, but you know, if they think Tua is going to make them better, you know, then it would make sense in that degree. But yeah, I'm one of those guys. I don't fix if it's not broken. Leave it alone. Leave good alone. And I think it's a questionable move, but we'll see if it works.
Ty, what's your thoughts on this, man? Because, I mean, here's the way that I'm looking at it. Let me just phrase it to you like this. You look at the Miami Dolphins, right? They're sitting at 3-3 right now, which is pretty respectable. As I mentioned, they're only one game back of first place. But the thing that I think you really, really have to consider here, Ty, is their upcoming schedule. They play 4-2 Los Angeles on Monday night, or this coming week, excuse me, the Rams. They have the 4-2 Cardinals after that. Then you have the pretty hot Chargers after that, and then they follow that up against the Broncos, which we all know the Broncos just knocked off New England. Now, here's the thing. All these games are winnable, but are these games winnable with a rookie at quarterback? What's your thoughts?
I think this is the right time to do it. Fitzpatrick has been up and down the league, and, of course, he's serviceable and can manage the game. But this is the way I look at it, and I'm glad that you brought this perspective up, too, because I looked at the situation that my team was in and how it's not fair to other quarterbacks across the board. Just looking at all of the quarterbacks that come out of college, they have somebody to learn from, and then they go in. And unfortunately, looking at the Lions situation, Matt Stafford came into the fire with no quarterback to learn from. They were just fresh off of a John Kitna season. They needed somebody now and nobody to learn from. At least Tua seen Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick's been a journeyman and gives him all the ins and outs, the wins and losses and things that he's seen. Now Tua can attack it from what Saban has told him. And also quarterback that's not only been a starter but also has been a backup himself. So I think Tua goes into the fire with a good amount of knowledge and a journeyman like Fitzpatrick that showed him a couple of games on what to do. And I think Tua's accuracy is better than Fitzpatrick, but Fitzpatrick has pulled off some interesting wins. But, again, I do agree with you too, Brian, that they are close to first place. It's very fickle in the AFC East, to say the least. But I think this is the right time, six games under their wing, and the Dolphins look okay. I don't want to say all right or good, but they look okay at this point in time.
Well, here's my perspective. I couldn't disagree with you more. And you know I'm a Tua guy, but I really think there's something to be said for rookie quarterback sitting for as close to a full year as possible, really learning the system. Let's not also forget that these guys didn't have rookie minicamp, they didn't have preseason, they didn't have the luxury of all those informal off-season programs. So every one of these quarterbacks is behind. As good as Joe Burrow looks right now, it's still not as good as he would have looked with four preseason games and an off-season workout program. So my whole thought is, here's what I'm thinking. If Tua is the face of your franchise, right, even if you're saying, hey, we think he's fully healthy, that there's no concerns, with all the injury concerns that you've had in the past with Tua, why, like, it almost feels like there's a rush to get him into the lineup. Ryan Fitzpatrick has not sunk the ship. That's my problem. He has not sunk the ship. I think that this, to me, this speaks volumes to me that Brian Flores does not want Ryan Fitzpatrick as his quarterback. Because, Ty, you mentioned, hey, Tua Tagovailoa is a more accurate passer. Hey, well, you know what? Not this year. Ryan Fitzpatrick's completing over 70% of his passes. He's top five in the NFL in completion percentage. But when he doesn't complete the pass, that other 20% of the time or 30% of the time, he does have seven interceptions. So, yes, he does have the occasional Brett Favre moment where he tries to gunsling it in. But he's extremely accurate with the ball. But, you know, I guess we're going to see. We're going to find out if Brian Flores is a genius or if he's a total knucklehead, because I personally feel like if you stick Tua in there and he gets injured, or if the game is maybe a little bit too big or fast for him, or, you know, he has issues adapting, I think you set him way behind. You know as good as anybody, Ty. Look at what the Lions did to Joey Harrington. I mean, that kid came out, and everybody thought he was going to be, you know, the second coming. You know, he was the savior. He was the messiah. And he got so shell-shocked so early on in his career that he heard phantom footsteps before there was even defenders there. He would literally touch the ball when he had a clean pocket. And that's the same thing Kevin Carr did in Houston. So my thing is are you telling me behind that offensive line that hasn't been great, behind a running game that doesn't have their lead back, that it's an optimal situation for Tua? And all I'm saying is I don't feel like it's optimal. I would have waited until further into the season. I'm not saying you have to be eliminated from the playoffs, but I would have waited till you're further into the season, allow that offensive line to gel a little bit more. I would have allowed the defense to continue the momentum that they've had the last couple weeks. And I'll be honest with you, I would have allowed Ryan Fitzmagic to continue that hot streak he has, because we all know at some point the hotness is going to turn cold, the stove is going to get turned off, but you need to ride that hot wave as long as you can, as far as you can, if you're the Dolphins, if you want to have a realistic shot of making the playoffs. And maybe they're not thinking that way. Maybe Flores is thinking, hey, you know what, I'm building for the future here, I want to get my young guys some reps. But you know what, there's a lot of aging veterans on that team, Ty. There's a lot of guys on that team that are in their late 20s, early 30s, and you know what, I can promise you, they don't care about a rebuilding project. They care about making the playoffs. And they have an obligation to that ball club and to those fans, full fans that have not seen a playoff contention in a really long time since Chad Pennington was the quarterback. They have an obligation to that organization where they're in it a third of the way through the season. They have an obligation to put the best team out there and try and win. That's my thoughts.
Okay, I'm gonna say this as quick as possible. I'm gonna do this as quick as possible. First off, we could agree to disagree. Second off, let's be honest. Everybody on that 53-man roster did not expect or think the Dolphins are playoff ready. None of them. Third, just like you said, there's pieces there that they have, but this is a rebuilding situation. If you think this isn't a rebuilding situation or not, they may want to win now, but they have at least the Patriots and the Bills to worry about in that division, which I know that they probably will not have a better season than unless the Patriots completely continue to collapse right now. And then we look across the whole spectrum of the AFC. I could think of at least five more teams throughout the remainder of the season that will at least probably beat them out for a wild card spot. So for now, for Tua to get the situation, and if you're looking at percentage, yes, if you're looking at the attempts that Fitzpatrick threw out, he threw more passes. He has 70% completion percentage, but Tua's only thrown two passes. He completed two passes. He only got in against the Jets. Like, he has to get in there and get some type of taste, let alone they're sitting at 500. I think this is a good time with nothing to lose. I mean, granted, if he gets hurt, he gets hurt, but this is what he signed up for. Like, and he knows that's what I was thinking about when I say that about a lot of these quarterbacks coming in from college. You got to think that Trevor Lawrence is going to come out of college. He's going to go to a bum. He's not going to come out and be 8-8 or 9-7. If he does, that's freakish. Like, we haven't seen anything like that since Big Ben, to be honest. If we're thinking about rookie quarterbacks, I'm not saying Tua is going to have the Dolphins in the playoffs, but if he does, that's a plus. He can't even think in his mind, oh, I'm going to be in the playoffs going up against my homeboy Jackson. I could say Watson, but they fell completely off. But I'm just trying to think of teams that, in general, that'll get there. Or Tannehill, like, just throw names out there. Like, the Titans will probably end up being a wild card. Like, so who knows, unless they hang on to the South. There's a lot of teams in the AFC that the Dolphins would have to leapfrog for them to considerably be a playoff team. I think this is something that he could build the hype up down there in Florida, put butts in seats, let alone Florida's opened up the gates on all seating in Miami. So, you know, people are going to come and see him too. The money is talking at the end of the day. And this isn't what I'm initially saying. This is the board across the board.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Fitzpatrick was the starter to start the year. I mean, what did he really gain in 5 weeks? You know, I mean, maybe a lot. And that's the thing is, we're not in camp. We don't know. But I just think it's interesting now, after 5 weeks, what did Tua really gain in 5 weeks? And I would doubt very much.
Well, we do have another caller in queue. I'm just going to say this quick piece. Ty, like you said, we can agree to disagree. But just remember this. Every single year, there is a team that didn't make the playoffs the previous year but make the playoffs. Outside of 49er fans, I don't think there was one person that would have predicted them to not just reach the playoffs but to make it to the Super Bowl last year after coming off a 4-12 season. I'm not saying the Dolphins are the 49ers, but what I'm saying is you have to look at each season individually, and when you evaluate the fact that they're one game out of first, and you evaluate the fact that they have as good a shot as literally anybody of making the playoffs this year, they're literally one game out of first place, I think you owe it to your team and your fan base. Making the playoffs is not as easy as, you know, the average fan thinks. I mean, Miami fans know better than anyone. They just had Tom Brady in that division, and they won that division something ridiculous like 18 out of 20 years. So with that said, let's bring in our next caller. Sirius is in the building. Sirius, how you doing tonight?
You talking to me? What's going on? This is Nas. What's going on, y'all?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nas. My bad, man. So you heard us talking about the Dolphins. I apologize, Nas. I got my numbers mixed up. Well, what's your thoughts on the Dolphins benching Ryan Fitzpatrick, one game out of first, and bringing in Tua? Good move, bad move, and why?
Well, it's a good move. And I wouldn't even call it a benching, because I think benching makes it sound like it's based on lack of performance, when I think this was the plan all along. To start it off, get him some tutelage. I think part of Ryan even having that job was, look, a big part of your job is going to be teaching him in the quarterback room. Because of COVID, they didn't really get the preseason reps and all the other offseason stuff that they get. So I think they just crammed for the first 5 weeks. And, you know, we'll have to see how Tua performs. But overall, as a franchise, you got those picks from the Texans next year. The biggest thing you want to do is get Tua snaps so you can see what you have. And I think people are missing this point. The biggest thing with NFL quarterbacks now, especially as rookies, is get them as many snaps as possible so you can see whether you need to start thinking about drafting another one or if you've got your guy. Right now in New York, the Giants don't know if they got their guy in Daniel Jones. Now in New York, the Jets, there are people who say Sam Darnold is perfectly fine. It's actually Gase who is messing things up, but they don't have a clear evaluation on him, so we'll never know. Dwayne Haskins, he looks terrible, but have they given him enough snaps to really know for sure whether they need to draft somebody? I don't know. Rivera's already made that choice. But I think snaps and starts for a quarterback are really big. So I say you get two in there. And then why are we falling for good Ryan? Like, don't we know that bad Ryan is coming? Like, to pull good Ryan,
exactly.
To take, Ryan out before bad Ryan shows his bad Ryan was coming. Like, we all know this, right? Like, we've seen this movie, haven't we?
But Thank you very much. Totally agree. Listen, before you came on, I totally 100% agree with you. At some point this year, Ryan Fitzpatrick will be bad Ryan Fitzpatrick. But what I said was, and tell me if you agree with this, when Ryan Fitzpatrick is on, when he's hot, when he's Fitzmagic, he's far better than what Tua's going to give you. So why not ride that hot streak until he starts to cool off and then insert him? Why insert him right now when you're going up against the Rams and Aaron Donald? Like, that's a hell of a welcome to the NFL.
Yeah, but it's a legitimate test, too. And I think that goes to what I was trying to get at. This is front office long-term decision-making as opposed to saying a coach who thinks, hey, I got to make the playoffs this year in order to keep my job. This is the franchise saying, okay, we got to see what we got. What does this rookie have? And if he's bad enough, we end up having to put Fitzy back in there. It's not out of the realm of possibilities that a team with two number one picks, as we just saw Arizona do, make a choice on something. Like, I just think you speed up the evaluation. Get them out there, get snaps, get some game tape, see what you got. So I'm in agreement with it.
All right, Norm, I'm going to give you one last thought on this, and then we're going to move on.
I think you guys are underestimating Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think he's matured finally after, 14 seasons, 8 teams. I think this is his moment to shine.
Matured after
right.
14
seasons?
Yeah.
Hey, man.
It took him 40 years, but he finally matured. Leave him alone.
Ryan ain't got a maturity problem. Ryan's got a he-loves-tight-windows problem. and he'll throw it.
Right.
When he's hot, he'll get it in there. Jeez. And when he goes cold, it gets ugly. That's just Ryan, man.
All right. There was a lot of crazy games this week, and I think we can all agree on that. I don't think it's an underestimation to say there was some massive upsets, and then there was some games that, you know, certain teams were kind of projected to play better, and maybe they fell flat on their face. But I'd like to go roundtable style and just say the biggest takeaway or the biggest surprise for you from last weekend. And, Ty, I'm going to come right back to you first. Biggest surprise of week six?
There's a lot. And I'm trying to think of the games quickly. I'm pulling up the scoreboard now. One that surprised me was the Washington football team's two-point conversion when they could have just kicked the extra point. And knowing that they don't have that flash in the pan offense to make something happen like that, then also looking at the Bengal game and how they had the lead and let the Colts storm back in that game. The Colts looked flat and deflated, especially the way that you guys had called the game out looking like the Colts are going to dominate them, and they didn't. The Bengals were doing work, and then all of a sudden it was like Joe Burrow went to sleep or something like that. And, you know, I mean, there's a ton of surprises. And also the Patriots losing at home to the Broncos without Melvin Gordon. And, you know, they had a fourth down attempt to get into the end zone, and the Patriots just couldn't get in there. And the talk has been Cam Newton needing help with that within that offense. And it is looking like that. Outside of Edelman throwing two passes or having a play set up for Cam Newton. Cam Newton had a big scramble, and they threw a pass to Cam Newton. They had no big plays within that offense. So that's stunning to look at that. And then I think just the icing cake was the Baker Mayfield situation, where I feel different about the rest of America. A lot of people are saying the bench Baker. I just think Baker ran into a buzzsaw division rival that's hot as hell, and they exposed him. And then knowing that he wants to throw the ball now, not now, but right now. So that Brown situation, I feel and the Browns will be a team that will beat out the Dolphins for a postseason position too if they stay sturdy. But the way that Baker looked, they look crazy, but I don't think to bench him. A lot of people are saying to bench Baker now. I don't agree with that. It looked bad against the Steelers.
All right, Norm, I'm going to come over to you. What was your biggest surprise or biggest takeaway from week six?
Yeah, obviously the Denver pulling off the upset the Patriots. That one actually cost me. I took the Patriots without the points just to sweeten up a parlay. I thought that was a guaranteed victory, and there you go. There's no guarantees when you're gambling. So that was a shocker. I was happy to see it. I just was upset because I bet against it. That was the biggest shocker. And then, you know, I wasn't surprised Atlanta won, but I was surprised just how garbage and crappy Minnesota looked. Minnesota's done for this year. And Kirk Cousins, I don't know where he's going to land, but I don't think anyone really wants him at this point.
All right, Nas, I'm going to come over to you. The boys have mentioned a few games. You can either agree with them or you can give me a different one. What was your biggest surprise or takeaway from week six?
Yeah, the biggest surprise for me was Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. I think, they played two games in 7 days or whatever it was, 6 days or whatever it was. But not only did they look fresh, man, they got in the shootout and they just kept shooting. So that was a surprise to me of what they were able to do. That's the kind of indicator of a special season. When you go through turmoil like they're going through and still pull off two wins, that's kind of, you know, kind of surprising. The next thing, he alluded to the Minnesota game. If you put Matt Ryan in the dome, Matt Ryan looks a lot better than what he is. Like, I think people forget that. The arm strength problem, you take away weather conditions, Matt Ryan can kind of light you up. You get a healthy Julio back. So that was a surprise performance, but I did bet on it, so I did win money on that because nobody thought they would win. So that was something. So I think that's something to think about within the league. If you got a Kyler Murray or somebody young, why wouldn't you want a dome? You know what I mean? Like, why not? Protect your passing game.
Now, you know what? That's a really good point, and I think it's something that's actually vastly underrated because – even a guy like Drew Brees, who, as everybody knows, you know what, inside the Louisiana Dome can be a monster at times. And then, you know, when he went on the road to Seattle, which they're a good defense, but looks like a completely different player when he's playing outside that dome. I will tell you, week six for me, was kind of a wake up or you know, kind of lay down type weekend. And I really feel like there was some teams that really stepped up, and there was some teams that really put forth some really gutty performances. I think let's start with the Bears. A lot of people were talking about how good the Panthers were, and you know what? Even though the Bears were 4-1 going into the game, that they were soft, they weren't that good, they weren't going to win the game. And the Bears just continue to find ways to win games. And you know what? Kudos to the defense. I'm not taking anything away from the offense or Foles. But, I mean, if you look at what they've held their opponents to this year, I mean, the Bears are a legit team. Like, no doubt about it. You go back and you look at the scores. I mean, granted, I know not all these teams are phenomenal, but, I mean, they held Tampa Bay to 19. They held the Panthers to 16. They held the Colts to 11. You know, they held the Giants to 13. I mean, those are pretty good teams, and they're holding these teams high-scoring offenses. Indy scored 31 this week. They're holding these high-scoring offenses. It's kind of like bringing back, like, the 80s nostalgia of or even the early 2000 Ravens, like defense winning championships, you know, that kind of mantra. So it's really nice to see, as Ty mentioned, you know what? I was shocked that New York Giants actually won the game. But you know what? It kind of goes to the whole, like, what the hell was Washington thinking? Like, I know you're a 1-4 team and you're kind of like throw caution to the wind, but you're a 1-4 team that's one game out of first place. Like, this is the same situation as the Dolphins, boys. You're one game out of first place. Like, you win that game and your season may be a lot different, even though you still have a losing record. Like, we legitimately could see a 6-10 team win the NFC East. And you cannot afford to give away games like that. So that was another one. And I'll give you one final one that nobody's touched on. And you know what? Some people are going to disagree with this, but I got to tell you, man, my biggest takeaway from this weekend, Carson Wentz is a baller, a bona fide baller. That guy is missing the top four offensive tackles on his roster. He's missing the top four wide receivers from his roster. He's missing now Zach Ertz and Goddard, his top two tight ends. And against the number one defense and the number one quote-unquote team, because I know, Norm, you're about to say something different, in the Ravens, these dudes just continue to put up points. He continues to find a way to keep his team relevant. I mean, we make excuses for Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, oh, well, he didn't have, you know, Devontae Adams. Like, that's why, you know, that's why Tampa Bay, you know, Devontae Adams wasn't all the way back. And I'm like, when you look at what Carson Wentz has had to try and overcome this year and how many sacks he's taken to this point, so it's not just because, like, his offensive line has been phenomenal. If you look at what he's had to overcome to get where he's at right now, I think it's phenomenal. And the fact that he's had some injury issues, I'd be scared to death if I was him behind that offensive line. And I don't know what's going on in Philly, but I think they might be the only team in the league that's more injured than San Francisco. So I did take that away. I'm not a Philly fan. But 2 weeks in a row, boys, going up against the Steelers last week, a team that's still undefeated, and then back-to-back the next week going up against the Ravens, keeping it competitive, keeping it within one score. And really, offense wasn't what, you know, what dragged them down. They couldn't get the stop when they needed to on defense. So I just wanted to say a quick kudos to Carson Wentz. Norm, you got anything else for us?
No, well, you know, I guess I will say it was a little surprising that Frisco knocked off the Rams. At least it was surprising to me. I think the Rams have been more like they looked a couple years ago, more steady. And I think I stopped watching that game in the third quarter because Frisco had handled it, and I was just sick and tired of watching it. So that was a shock to me.
I appreciate that. We do have another caller calling in from the 703. You are on with the Sports City Chefs in the building and the free-for-all. How you doing tonight?
You know, I'm going to go ahead and throw some respect on my name and stop using my area code as if you don't know it's your boy, man. What's cracking?
Hey, you know what? Everybody's going to assume you're a Washington Redskins fan and not a Steelers fan if they don't listen to the show regularly. So listen, I'm going to start right there. I'm going to start right there with you because I know you've mentioned all over about Miami, and we've talked about that. But Washington, I know that's your – if you were James Greenwood, that'd be your second team. What is going on with Washington, and why did they go for 2 points at the end of the game?
You know what? Honestly, I wish I knew the answer to that question. Quite frankly, I think Ron Rivera right now is sending a mixed message to his team and fans alike. You know, there have been several instances where he just has made bonehead call after bonehead call. And I refuse to put the fact that he's battling cancer and this, that, and the third as a reason as to why he and his staff continually make stupid calls late in games, in games. You give Dwayne Haskins some type of no-win test, and he fails. Now, let's keep it a buck with you. I didn't think Dwayne Haskins was suitable to play start quarterback in this league. However, he's who you got, so you must put him in a position to be successful. You know, I think it was a couple games ago, the Ravens game, I think it was, where it was fourth down and 14, and instead of kicking a field goal or punting the football, you elect to roll him out there in hopes that he understands the situation and throws the ball into the end zone. You fail to use your timeouts. Your defense is playing significantly well last week. All things considered, you're playing arguably one of the worst offensive football teams in the league, and instead of kicking a field goal, extra point there and taking your shot at, in overtime, you literally hand the New York Giants a game on a silver platter there. So I'm not too sure what's going on. Clearly, I mean, there's going to be some quarterback changes and stuff like that next year and, in years to come. But, for a division where, there's literally four wins combined between all four teams, you still could potentially go on a run here, win this division, and you're making decisions that are literally taking wins away from your ball club. I'm not understanding it much.
All right. Nas, I want to come to you. There was a report that surfaced today, and I don't know as a sports fan if this is something that I should find as a big deal or not. So I want to get your opinion on this. So there was a report today, and this was in The Athletic, that there were several unnamed Cowboys players that said that they were totally unprepared and are blaming the coaching staff for their recent loss. Obviously, what they're referring to is the most recent game that they just played, and they look absolutely horrific against the Cardinals. They got blown out 38-10. Nas, is that a big deal when the players start pointing the fingers at the coaches, or is that fair given the conditions and the time?
Not only is it fair, but when you see that happen, that's not a one-week scenario. That means you're talking about players have compiled evidence over the whole season to where you can speak out and leak something like that. Because understand something, when you undermine a coach in the NFL, if you're not a great player, you're actually putting your career at risk and talking to whatever writer you're talking to about that, because that story could get out, and then guys will not trust you. GMs won't want to put you on the roster if you're borderline, and coaches won't want you. So when somebody steps out of school like that and says those things, and then you look at the product we've seen on the field as far as the Cowboys, I think they're correct. Aaron Rodgers ran Mike McCarthy out of town for a reason, and what we're seeing right now from him and Mike Nolan is terrible schematically. Defensively, yeah, their talent is not the greatest, but they don't even have simple concepts, like simple schemes that are able to get them off the field. Like, they are terrible. And once again, Jerry, who's smarter than everybody else, told us Andy Dalton still had something left. So he pays over market value to bring in Andy Dalton instead of upgrading some other position. And you got to see what Andy Dalton looks like in 2020. So, yeah, the Cowboys are a mess, a dumpster fire. And hopefully this season is really long and painful for Cowboys fans. Salute.
Yeah, you know what? I find it, man, I got to tell you, and I appreciate the response, Nas. I always find it fascinating that rather than hire, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm not trying to start anything here, but you know how we do it here in the kitchen. We keep everything 100. You know, you got Eric Bieniemy over there, offensive coordinator in KC. Everybody knows he's the hot name. You've got several other, you know, obviously Minnesota's Kevin Stefanski is doing great things over there in Cleveland. And you take a retread coach that's been out of the league for a year in Mike McCarthy. I just always wonder why people think that these coaches that have been around the league for a long time, that have gotten an opportunity and, like, things didn't work out previously, like, why they think it's going to work out better the second time around. You know, obviously Jerry – had some type of connection with him, you know, whether it was, you know, Mike saying, hey, you know what, you can have, you know, final say on everything. I don't know. But I just find it fascinating because there is so many good young coordinators that have never gotten an opportunity that really deserve an opportunity, and you continue to see these retreads. So I appreciate the response. I do have another question. Ty, this one's coming at you. Every year, we typically have about 3 head coaches fired. Obviously, to this point, we have not reached that quote-unquote quota. So, with that said, if you look at the coaches that are most likely on the hot seat, you got Mike Zimmer in Minnesota, Anthony Lynn at the Chargers. You got Matt Patricia in Detroit. I'm sure you know who he is. You have Doug Marrone in Jacksonville, and then our boy, our favorite, perhaps, Adam Gase in New York. Who's the most likely to get fired, and who do you think is the safest of that group?
That's interesting. Gase, it depends if the Jets turn is around, but I highly doubt they can. I know Gase will probably be the first one to go. A lot of people were saying if they lose this game against the Dolphins, he would go. He's still safe, and it's Wednesday tomorrow. So Gase is safe. I think, and that's something about the family up here in Jersey. They let the season continue and do it at the end of the season. So that's one. If Patricia don't turn this around, I'm going to Michigan talking junk. Like, get him out of here. Like, I'm already content. Like, let them blow this thing up. Get rid of Stafford. Get rid. I don't ever want to see my team blown up, but blow this thing up. He's done. But he pulled up a win against Jacksonville, and everybody in Michigan that I know and all of the groups that I'm attached with, oh, they're back. Stafford, this thing. I'm like, yo, they beat Jacksonville, dog. And the next game that we got, and I hate to be saying this right here on air, but track 8 off of the Life After Death album, Nas, is called What's Beat, just so you know, in Georgia. That's all I'm saying right now.
We ain't worried.
All right. Stuff.
Yes, y'all is worried.
Norm, I want to come to you for the next question here. Several people that are extremely intelligent, I'll let you figure out who, predicted that the Green Bay Packers, the undefeated Green Bay Packers, would actually be beaten by Tampa Bay, and they said that the game would not be close. So I guess the question to you is this a one-game hiccup, or has Green Bay been exposed?
Yeah, I actually was watching that game, and you know, Green Bay was up 10-0, and they looked, I'm not going to say in control, but they definitely had the upper hand. And it was two interceptions that really led to Tampa Bay getting out in front, and they were both, I want to say, dropped passes by receivers. You know, so 14-10, just like that. But Rodgers had plenty of time, plenty of opportunities to reverse that, and he didn't. And Tampa Bay took off from there. If those, you know, I hate getting hypothetical, but if those don't happen, I still think Tampa Bay would probably win that game. Looking at how it went, I just think it would have been a lot closer. And then again, once games get out of hand, you start forcing things. The offense, you know, all the things you worked on, going away from. I wouldn't say that the Green Bay Packers are going to implode. I think defensively they're a better team than they were last year, and I think the offense has looked more fluent. So I still think they're going to win their division. And I still think they can compete with the upper teams. So that's my take on that one.
Serious? My question to you is, a couple of the real quote unquote contenders lost this last week in really ugly fashion. Cleveland Browns, the New England Patriots, and the St. Louis Rams. Well, the Los Angeles Rams, and the Buffalo Bills. I'll throw all them in there. Of those four teams, the Rams, the Bills, the Patriots, and I'm sorry, I forgot to get
the
Browns.
Browns.
Which team is in the most trouble and why?
I'm going to be painfully honest with you. It's the Cleveland Browns. And people are going to say, Aaron, you're an AFC North guy, and, you know, the Steelers have beat the Browns. The blueprint really is out on the Cleveland Browns. If you look at their four wins, they are against teams that really do not smash them in the face. You know, they are literally – they scored a total of 14 points combined between the Ravens and the Steelers. And they're outscored by 30. You know what I'm saying? So when they play the upper echelon teams, they really seem to fold under the pressure. Baker Mayfield, again, I came in while Ty was mentioning this a little bit ago. Baker Mayfield has shown his inability to throw from inside the pocket. And big moments, he folds. That defense, again, they played good, and, you know, they went on a four-game winning streak. But, you know, that defense, you know, it's going to continually get challenged. That offensive line is going to continually get challenged. And what the hell is going on with Odell Beckham Jr. and company? So I think out of the four teams you mentioned, I think the Patriots are going to right their ship. You know, and get back right. I think Buffalo, although I'm not as high on them as I was a little while ago, but I think they're going to be okay. But Cleveland's in some serious trouble for a few reasons, of which I don't think the AFC North is sending three teams to the playoffs anyway. So they're going to be the odd man out from the rip.
Yeah, you know,
Can I answer him real quick?
Go ahead.
I don't think that's an Odell problem. I don't think that's Odell. I think that's more Baker's situation. But he got to get that figured out as soon as possible. Like he can't still be erratic while things happen like that. And also with Brian saying about to Norm about that, I think that's a one game hiccup. Tampa Bay figured it out. Their front four could close that offensive line, and they got to send the linebacker. That's the first time I've seen a team get after Aaron Rodgers with a linebacker blitzing, and he really couldn't get the pass off. So I think in both scenarios, it's the starting quarterback, at least for this week. Baker couldn't do nothing with the Steelers. The Steelers, they had the right recipe for him, and I don't know what the Bucs did. The Bowles and company, they figured out how to get to Rodgers and made Rodgers get happy feet and corral the ball. He didn't even want to let it go to, like, let these receivers make plays.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I would say
is,
did I get in on that one?
Not for the same
reason.
That's a really good question.
Not for the same reasons that Sirius said it, but the one thing I will say is this, and then Nas and Norm, I'll let you guys chime in. I do think that it's Cleveland, but it's not for the reasons that he mentioned. You know, the offense may come around. What concerns me is, the Big Ben and the Steelers only threw for 162 passing yards. It wasn't like they threw the ball all over the yard. They scored 38 points because they ran the ball 31 times for almost 200 yards. You can't play in the AFC against teams like Nas mentioned earlier, like Tennessee, Baltimore, the Steelers, the Colts. You got to be able to stop the run. First and foremost, you have got to stop the run. And Cleveland, this isn't a this-year problem. This is a this-year problem, a last-year problem. I mean, literally, Exhibit A, they played San Francisco on prime time last year and got completely run out the building. And literally San Francisco turned around, handed off right, turned around, handed off left. They could not stop the run. And when you can't stop the run, your phenomenal superstar, Garrett, doesn't get an opportunity to get to the quarterback, and what ends up happening, Big Ben is barely pressured. He sacked twice the entire game, and Cleveland's constantly playing from behind and constantly playing from behind the eight ball
time of possession wise. As far as the other, the Green Bay, I personally, I said this before, they are, in my opinion, maybe quite possibly like ever. I know they've played a couple decent teams. You know, New Orleans doesn't look to be as strong as we thought they might have been earlier in the year. But here's what I'm going to say. I think that the blueprint is out on Green Bay. I think that Green Bay offensively is very good, but I think they're horrific defensively. You can move the ball on them, so it's going to be 100% on Aaron 100% of the time, and I just don't think that that's a recipe for success. Norm, I'm going to come to you, and then I'm going to turn the floor over to Nas. Go ahead, Norm.
Yeah, you know, as far as the teams, most trouble AFC, yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think Cleveland belongs on that list. I mean, their record says they do, but I just don't think they're a very good team. Patriots, you know, I'll give them a pass because they had like zero time to prepare. And let that be a reminder for a lot of people to understand how important it is that you know, football players get their rest. And just the, I mean, even the 7-day window or 6-day window they get just in preparing for the next is barely enough. That's why the Thursday night games are so non-popular with the players. But, yeah, I want to see what the New England does next. But I will say offensively, New England just doesn't look great. They're relying on Cam running the ball, which is what, you know, I think everyone says Cam shouldn't do to protect his health. I don't think they're going to use him like Carolina did, but it seems like every time they need 7 yards, it's Cam Newton running for it. So if that's your go-to and teams start to stack against it, I think the Patriots are actually in trouble offensively, but they still are the Patriots, and they will find a way to win close games.
Well, like Norm said, Cleveland's probably the one team that doesn't deserve to be in that conversation. They're definitely playing above their ski. Stefanski's a good coach, and I think next year we'll see somebody else as a signal caller. Right now, he's basically having Baker play as a game manager. They want to run the ball. Losing Chubb kind of hurt because now you're depending on Kareem Hunt to just be the RB1 all game. But, I mean, that's their recipe for success. And against bad teams, it's going to work. But certain teams, it's just not going to be enough. And at some point, they're going to loosen the reins on Baker and give him a shot. But this is his Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota year. He's got to prove it, or else he's going to join that backup line, signing somewhere else, trying to rehabilitate his career. As far as Green Bay, I think that's a one-off. Hey, you lose the game. It happens. Aaron Rodgers is really bad. How often is that going to happen? I don't think very much. As far as the Patriots, Cam Newton was really bad, and they still had a chance to win because the defense was still solid. Got him a couple turnovers, got him in position to win. Cam just didn't make the plays, and I don't think that's going to happen often either. And really, their offense, to me, there's enough weapons there. You got speed guy and Bird. You got Edelman being Edelman, and they got 111 running backs. So I think they're still going to be able to produce enough points to win. It's just that defense has to come together. And, look, Green Bay is a problem. Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones, as long as you got Aaron Rodgers and he has adequate weapons, they're going to score. So that was the last team, right? It was those three, or was it one more?
Yeah, it was
Cleveland.
I think it was Green the Bills he put
Buffalo
in there, too.
Yeah, Buffalo is a playoff team. They're going to – I mean, they got all the same problems that New England has. The defense is solid. Josh is going to have off games like he did the other day, same as Cam. But he's also going to have games where he's getting chunk yardage in a running game, and he's hitting some of that downfield stuff that he was missing the other day. So they're still a tough out. I think they get into the playoffs. They're probably going to lose in a home game, but this is progress. You got him with a number one receiver now, and I like Buffalo in the future.
Start trouble, though. I want to see Antonio Brown go back to the Patriots. If they need another gun in that receiver corps, put him back in there.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, that's tough.
Especially
they need somebody, though. They need somebody. Like, who they going to get? They can't have him get – like, and this is the thing that upset me. N'Keal Harris – N'Keal is a shell of himself from college. He didn't do anything. Like, he's been hurt the first
right.
season he came here. He's not doing anything right now. They need another option out there that can create some type of space, somebody in the receiver corps. They have no tight end that they can rely on, and Edelman is their guy. Like, no. Everybody in the league knows about Edelman. He's not a secret any longer.
They need to get Wes Welker and Chris Hogan.
Hellman's going to get open in the slot. It is what it is. And James White's probably going to catch 60 balls the rest of the season. You know what I mean? He's going to be a
winner. Oh, yeah.
I think they're fine.
So here's what I want to do for the upcoming game, Week 7. You know what? I don't want to go game by game because that's kind of Ty's thing to do on Sunday morning. So here's what I want to do. I want to spend the last 10 minutes. I want to talk about some of the most compelling matchups and just really talk about what each team would need to do to win. And the first game that I want to talk about is Pittsburgh and Tennessee. You got two undefeated teams. It's the only game where two undefeated teams are playing. Tennessee has really proven a lot, I think, in the last couple weeks. Like Nas said, with the amount of restricted time that they've had in office and all the players and coaches they've had, and the Steelers have proven a lot the last couple weeks, you know, showing that they're for real. So with all that said, Ty, I'm going to come right back to you first. Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't need a score. I don't want to know who you think wins. All I want to know is, what does Pittsburgh need to do to win this game, and what does Tennessee need to do to win this game?
I am so thankful you came to me first, because I want to say this here and now on Sports City. Before I say the here and now, what the Steelers need to do, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They've been doing just fine with having that balanced attack and not forcing Ben to make every play. Like, Ben has been the right, and I hate to call Ben a game manager because I love Ben Roethlisberger, but I don't want to call him a game manager because he's a vet, like, and a legend in my eyes, but I still feel like he's still adapting to the game because he missed so much time. Tennessee, that defense is so rock and roll right now. It's like being at a concert, and this is what I want to say here and now in Sports City. Like, I always had a genuine like or love for Derrick Henry, but it's beyond now. He's the best running back in the game. I don't care what you do. It needs to turn into the last Boy Scout. Somebody need to bring a gun and shoot that dude because nobody wants to tackle him. That third and goal play, he was in Wildcat. Everybody knew he was getting the ball, and he got to the end zone and won the game. Like, incredible. He's a throwback player. And, you know, even with, like, Shannon Sharp and all of them interviewing him, they was like, he's a legit 6'4", 260. He's like the third and fourth quarter. Defenses don't want to tackle him. So if they can keep him clean as much as possible, of course he's going to take some damage and just keep the pressure off of Tannehill, the Titans will continue to roll. That's an excellent game. I'm glad that you came to me first on that one. That's going to be a great game.
All right, Nas, what's your thoughts on this one? What does Pittsburgh need to do? What does Tennessee need to do?
Yeah, if you're Tennessee, who's kind of have some issues defensively as far as, like, coverage and communication, just like blowing plays, I think you got to force Pittsburgh to run. The same thing they just did against Cleveland, I think you're going to have to force them to do that to you. Because, look, I don't know if y'all know this, but Randy Moss has jumped into a time machine, and he puts on a jersey, and it says Claypool on the back. But that's actually Randy Moss. Just know that. You know what I'm saying? The people don't know this, but Randy's a sneaky guy, man. That's what's going on. You don't want to deal with Ben in the passing game. We haven't seen Juju have a big game yet. James Washington is showing well. And Deontay Johnson may be coming back. So and Ebron at tight end. I think Pittsburgh is really hard to deal with in the passing game. So if I'm Tennessee, I want to force them to have to just run me to death because I don't think their running game is going to generate enough points. On the flip side, you got to be willing to tackle Derrick Henry. Like, that's just what it is. Like, you gang tackling all day, you're going to have to make A.J. Brown beat double teams and beat you. Give him one-on-one coverage and force that to happen. The sad thing is it can happen because Tannehill is that good. Funny how that happens when you get away from Adam Gase. But, yeah, that's what I think happens.
All right, interesting. Sirius, I'm going to give you a chance at the end here to talk about your team, but I do have some other compelling games, and I want to get your thoughts on the next one. Tampa Bay at the Las Vegas Raiders. You got Brady coming off an impressive victory over Aaron Rodgers. You got the Raiders who are coming off an impressive victory over Kansas City, both teams over 500. How do you see this playing out? What do the Raiders need to do to win this game, and what does Tampa Bay need to do to win this game?
You know, honestly, a couple of things. First of all, if you're the Las Vegas Raiders, stick to the script. Do not get caught up in trying to, you know, go up and down the field and throw the ball to center third. Stick to your script. Hand the ball off to Jacobs. Take the check downs. You know, kind of muck this game up, if you will. Get into that, you know, Kansas City Chiefs from, you know, yesterday type of game where you just run the football. Derek Carr, take the 5 yards, take the 7 yard out, you know, and just make it ugly. And then on the defensive side of the football, do not lose your water. Do not lose your water. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Tampa Bay is going to make plays, but don't come the situation. If you're Tampa Bay, listen, bro, you got TB12, you got all the, you know, bells and whistles. It's time to start making some noise. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you got Godwin back who had a decent game. You got Mike Evans back. You know what I'm saying? You got a two-headed monster in Rojo and Fournette. You know, Gronk came back and did the Gronk spike. You know what I'm saying? It's time to ratchet this thing up. You know, people kind of had your guys left for dead when you lost a Thursday nighter to the Chicago Bears, and you came back and beat a very good Rodgers Green Bay Packers-led team. It's time to go. Defensively, make Derek Carr beat you. If you're Tampa Bay defense, make Derek Carr beat you. You know what I'm saying? Do not let Josh Jacobs get out and run. Do not let Josh Jacobs, you know, get on in the check down game. Make Derek Carr make smart reads and beat you.
All right, Norm, coming over to you. Same game, Tampa Bay, Las Vegas. Like I said, don't need the prediction on how it's going to go. Just want to know, what do you think the keys to the game are for each squad? What do they need to do in order to walk away with a W?
Yeah, for the Raiders, I think looking at them, because I've watched them closely this year, there's only one game I really felt like they were outplayed, and that was the one against New England. And I think that had more to do with the fact that Belichick's probably the best defensive mind the NFL's ever seen, and he knew exactly how to play him. So you could easily say, oh, just try to imitate that, but it's not that easy. You got to have the personnel, and you got to call the right plays at the right time. Other than that, the Raiders have been moving the ball with consistency all year long. I think they'll continue to do that. The one thing that the Raiders can't Carr can't have interceptions against Tampa Bay, and this kind of has one of those feelings of you know, if Carr can continue to hit the shots down the field to keep the defense honest, they probably would win this game. A lot of times Carr, you know, throws those up and they're 50-50 balls, and if they start getting picked, it's going to be over. So, it's kind of a cop-out saying don't turn the ball over because that's the ingredient for winning. But really, I'm going to say Carr just can't have interceptions, and I think they win that game. And then with Tampa Bay, I think if they just win the time of possession – and they continue to move the ball, and you got Tom Brady, Mr. Charlie, checked down for 5 yards, who's the king at that. I think if they just eat up the clock, I think they're more balanced of a team, and if you minimize the Raiders' possessions, that would be the key ingredient for their win. But that should be a really good game, and it can go either way, so I'm staying cool on that one.
All right, boys. We got one last game, and I'm gonna do this one in the order in which you came in, reverse order. So, Sirius, I want you. We're gonna comment on the Monday night game, Chicago against the Rams. It's in Chicago against Los Angeles Rams. It's in Los Angeles. Give me the keys, and if you want to give a shout out to your boys, feel free. And then give me a final thought here before we head out the kitchen.
Honestly, gentlemen, I think the Rams are really going to play well this week. I'm not going to predict the score and all that other type of stuff because that's what we're going to do another show. But I really do like this matchup. The Rams really got beat up bad on Sunday Night Football versus a San Fran team, which I believe they should have beat. But that's another conversation of the day. As for the Steelers-Tennessee Titan game, Mike Thomas said it best to this afternoon. It's a five-star matchup, and we got to be willing to make the tackle. We can't be scared to make a tackle. We negate the run to stop Derrick Henry winning this ball game going away.
if we don't, we're going to have problems. With that being said, man, it's a pleasure being here with you guys, man. Lord willing, I'll be able to back in the building on another show, man. And I'm out, man. I'll be good.
Thanks, Sirius. I think I know why me and Ty are laughing. I'm thinking, Nas, how many people's game plan against Tennessee has been, hey, all we got to do is just stop Derrick Henry and we'll probably win this game.
Exactly.
Here's the funny thing about that. Not too many teams have the mentality and the horses to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, Derrick Henry has not played a defense like Pittsburgh to date this year. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, y'all laugh all you want. My boys is going to come hit this boy, and if we're scared to hit this boy, then we're going to have problems.
Right. But these dudes are all pro NFL players. They know what they need to come do. He's getting these 90-yard touchdowns like when he wants. Like, if he's faced with that, he can hit a home. He got the speed to hit a home run. And when he gets to the third level, what safety or corner want to deal with him? If you got your linebackers getting blocked, if those linemen could get second level, what safety or corner want to deal with him in the league? I'll give you a head start.
That's my point.
Or
that's
tank.
My point.
That's
we have to be willing
Josh
to hit
Norman,
this man. Like, I mean, well, Josh Norman's still flying.
Josh Norman
is
still
flying. He was willing. A lot of other people would have did an Olay tackle at his legs to act like they tried. He actually tried, and yeah, he paid for it. But you know you stop Derrick Henry when you go into the training room and a bunch of your linebackers are in there and a couple of your defensive ends are in there. That means you were in a fight and you were hitting that dude all game and some people are banged up. If everybody's clean, then he probably ran all over you. But to the Rams game and the Bears game, I think the Rams are going to be angry. I've seen a clip that's circulating of Aaron Donald being blocked really well. I don't think that's going to sit well with him. Look for them to really come after Nick Foles. He's going to have to really hold his composure, and they're going to have to exploit the Allen Robinson matchup because, I mean, that's the only real advantage they're going to have, even though Ramsey's probably going to be on them. And then on the other side, Rams are going to do what they do, running back by committee, throwing the Woods and Cup. And I think they'll be extremely successful against the Bears. Like, I think they're going to – oh, let me not give a prediction, but yeah.
You can, Nas, because I know you work during the time frame for the Sunday morning. I'm just saying because the rest of us, we normally get together on Sunday morning. But you do work, so it's up to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Rams are going to walk. Easy work.
All right. Ty, I'm coming over to you. Give me a final thought on Rams and Chicago. It is in Los Angeles. And then a plug, close out, anything you want to rep before we head out to the kitchen tonight?
I'm gonna say this, right? First, to answer Nas, it ain't that easy to say that Chicago is done. I said the Tampa Bay was going to take them out. Carolina was going to take them out. I thought y'all was going to take them out. Chicago has been doing it anywhere at any given time, so I can't count them out. But just like Nas said, they did a good job scheming on getting Aaron Donald out of the game, like making him go in a different direction and having the play go the other way. So I don't know what they can do, especially with the run game. They're going to have to neutralize him as best as possible because if they do get pass heavy, I want to see if that offensive line could deal with him and keep Foles clean because Foles – I mean, he can be mobile, but he's not as fast as other quarterbacks. So Donald can get back there. That would be interesting. So we'll see. That is another good game to see. And I don't know who to pick on that game, and that's brutally to be honest. So I will be ready for that on Sunday. And like I said, Nash, if you don't come around the kitchen tomorrow or on Sunday, like I said, Life After Death album track 8, what's beef?
All right.
Yeah, but remember,
Norm,
y'all
I'm
trying to win.
To
we
you.
Trying to tank, baby.
Norm, I'm coming over to you. Same thing. Bears, Rams, how do you see this playing out? And give me a final thought before we head out the kitchen.
take their records away and just go back and watch both those teams play their first five games. And what you come away with is there's one good team and there's one bad team. I'll take the good team. You have to watch the games to figure out that is. It's not hard. Just use your eyes. Be honest. There's one good team. There's one bad team on that field. The good team's going to win. My final thought is the Derrick Henry. You know, he's probably, in my opinion, one of the most exciting players to watch now when he gets the ball, because it's funny trying to watch guys try to tackle him. And I can only imagine going heads up with that guy. And what I find the most unique about that situation is, correct me if I'm wrong, but his ass was on the bench for like the first 2 years. Like Malarkey, the coach at the time, didn't really play him. And it was baffling to me. I was like, get this sucker the ball.
Yeah, remember they had DeMarco.
Right.
And I mean, I was thinking he was going to be a cut or trade. And I'm like, and finally he gets his chance. I think it was like during week 15 of his third year, and he goes off like 240 yards, and the rest has been history. Could you imagine where his stats would be if they actually gave him the rock his first 2 seasons? It'd be amazing.
Well, I just want to take the time to say I appreciate all the boys joining us tonight. I hope you enjoyed the NFL free-for-all here on a Tuesday night. Get your NFL fix. As Ty said, he'll be back tomorrow night. Same bat channel, similar bat time. So check out SportsCityChefs.com, or you can go to blogtalkradio.com, search Sports City Chefs, and look for the schedule. They will be back tomorrow as well as Sunday. I'm just going to simply say this. I don't agree with the norm comment of a good team or a bad team. But what I do notice is there is clearly two superior units here, and I think they're both on the same side of the ball. And that's the defenses. I think both the defenses in this game are vastly ahead of the offenses. I don't see either team scoring 20 points in this game, and I'll just leave it at that. That's all the time that we have today. Thank you so much for joining the Sports City Chefs, and we're out.